The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2023. This is now the 13th night. Hold on a second, let me just check. Yes, the 13th night, which is nice. And there are four streams. There were going to be five, but two people dropped out. So it was very. There was an hour of chaos earlier when I was scrambling to sort that out. Robin Riley and Wyatt Stagg had to drop out for different reasons. It's unfortunate, but these things happen. So Radix Verum is going to appear instead, and it's only going to be four. So it'll be a normal night instead of the five bumper edition that was planned. But that's good. So in a few hours, it'll be Off-Grid Ireland, then Radix Verum, and then Antidem. But first, it's Dangerfield, and you might have noticed already what I noticed immediately, which is that he's looking a bit bulky this year. So no longer the lanky art student that we know so well, but rather this muscle-bound beefcake. So, Dangerfield, not to dwell on the topic, but would you like to explain your incredible transformation?
Well, I can... If I get the light right and really tense, I can make it look ridiculous. It's kind of ridiculous anyway, but I don't know. You know, I'm 52 years old. I'm an old man. My girlfriend's 25. And I think unconsciously, subconsciously, I think, you know, you walk around and there's all these young lads around. You know, I'm sort of getting out of bed in the morning. I can't see for 20 minutes, even with my glasses on. I'm sort of holding my back. And so I didn't sort of plan it. But subconsciously, I've done what I can to sort of, you know, balance things out a little bit. Well, there's other things like wisdom and, you know, I've got a job and a house and things. So that's all right. But I think that's what it is. And also, it's an illusion. I don't do my legs. I used to do, you know, no one does leg day except for weight bodybuilders, you know, sitting there looking at their calves. I don't think I've ever exercised my calf, ever. I can't imagine sort of looking at it. It's just shoulders, biceps and boobs, really. And so it probably looks a lot more impressive than it is in real life.
Well, or maybe the lens is distorting things, perhaps, but I doubt it. It looks like you've really done well there.
Well, I was looking very ill for a lot of my life. So I think when I let things go, they go pretty bad. So maybe last millennial, there was a period that, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, where I really went downhill in a bad way. And I think I went down to about 72. I know I went down to 72 kilos and I'm now 86. So it gives you an example. And I haven't got any taller. So it's come out a bit. We're doing a weightlifting stream. How are you getting on? What are you benching, Woes?
Oh, well, that's not good. I don't like to boast.
have you ever done it? Have you ever lifted weights?
No, actually, no, I haven't.
It's something that
I obviously should get into, and I think every guy, because exercise is good for you, not just physically, it's good for you mentally. I don't know
where the weightlifting is. I met this bloke who he was in prison for 10 years. And he just got out. I met him in a facility for people who just left similar institutions. And he was the gym orderly in prison. And he was one of these sort of monsters, you know, you could see every muscle. And I hated it. It's just not my, that, it wasn't my thing at all then. And he used to go to the gym every day. And one day he said, you know, it was middle of winter. He said, why don't you come up and just have a steam? He said, it's lovely. And I thought, all right, I'll do that. And I remember telling an ex-girlfriend, she said, what are you doing later? I was just talking to her on the phone. I said, I'm going for a steam. She said, what, in a gym? And I said, yeah. She went, nah. She said, I knew it would happen. I said, what? I'm just going for a steam. She said, oh, going for a steam. She said, you'll be in that gym next. So now I'm in the steam room and I'm like the sort of streak of piss. And there's all these massive blokes around me. And then I sort of started thinking, well, maybe I could just, you know, bulk up. This is 15 years ago. Maybe I could bulk up just a little, you know, maybe do a little bit of exercise. And I said to him, I said, would you train me a little bit? And he said, well, I will do. He said, but it's not good for you. He said, weightlifting's not good for you. He said, lifting, your body is not designed to repeatedly lift heavy weights. He said, you'll have lots of injuries, which I'm going back to when I was 35 now. It's a long time ago. He said, you'll have repeated injuries. You'll probably not, once you get an injury, it means you can't train for sort of 3 or 4 months, but you won't leave it that long because you'll miss it. So you'll go back, then you'll have a repeated injury, and then you'll always have that then. And I have. I've got a problem with this elbow. It always hurts.
So he was telling you all the bad stuff, but you went ahead anyway.
Well, he told me the truth. He said it. He said, you will be over the moon at the amount of attention you'll get you'll get a lot more attention from women just because you're changing shape. But I didn't have much of a problem with that anyway, but I did certainly notice that on top of it. And you just get obsessed with it. And I used, when I lived in Soho, I had a gym just around the corner. And I'd go every day, and that's not good for you. Your body needs to rest in between sessions, which is when you're meant to do legs. But that, yeah, and I've smashed my body up. I don't think it's good for a person my age to lift the kind of weights I'm lifting just to pretend I'm not old. Oh. I don't think it's a positive thing, is what I'm saying.
So why are you doing it?
Well, that's the classic question, isn't it?
Well, then again, why do I drink Coca-Cola?
You are still on the Coca-Cola, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, that is that's awful stuff. I mean, how many a day do you do?
Oh, one or two, yeah.
That's not an answer.
I don't honestly know. It varies. It varies a lot.
I honestly thought you were going to say, oh, just one. But you do.
It's not one. No. Definitely not during millennial. I mean, that's the thing. When I'm doing these streams, it's a sort of natural thing to need a drink because you're doing a lot of talking. So it's obviously it's more during millennial. But yeah, the point is, ideally, and see, this is what I did with smoking. I just cut it out totally, cold, like completely, 100%. And it really worked.
You held back from saying cold turkey to me then, didn't you?
Well, I think maybe I can't remember actually, but yeah, that term, yeah, because it just worked. I can't really explain why.
You're breaking up a bit. I don't know if it's me or you.
Oh.
Okay, sorry. We can plod on. I think it's all right. It was just a tiny bit. Anyway, weightlifting, no more. It's rubbish. Don't do it. But I do think you're right. I think it does do a lot for my head. You know, it feels good after doing it. You know, I feel like I haven't just sat there. Because if I'm not writing or working, I find I just feed myself. You know, I just get bored and I'll start eating. I do a bit of yoga as well. But you do get an amazing sort of chemical sensation that lasts for a good couple of hours after doing a good workout. But I think it's weird. I mean, we are going to talk about AI people. Please don't tune out and think this is a gym the gym session. But I don't think it's good for you, and most people who do it know that it isn't. So
I mean, the obvious question to ask just before we leave this topic is you just used the term chemical sensation. Is this, could this be related to, you know, similar to drugs? Like in the sense that you're getting a hit from this?
Yes, but I think there's easier ways of getting that. If that was the, you know, if I wanted to do that, I live in Cambodia. You can buy fentanyl ampules in Cambodian pharmacies. So, you know, I think if it was for that, I probably wouldn't.
Danger Floyd. Sorry to interrupt.
You know what? I'll have a think about it. I think my first answer was the answer. I think it was a response to getting older as my missus is maturing into a very, very beautiful woman. She's a gym instructor. No, look, I've just there you go. I've just answered the question. So she's sculpted her body like near perfect, and I was just a mess, an old mess of a man.
Ah, well, it's strange to hear you say this, because last year you were saying that, you know, 50, 51 was young and you felt good.
Oh, I think I'm being a little bit sort of blasé about the whole thing. I mean, it's weird that I've done this to my body. So I don't know how I feel about it. She loves it. That's all right. I mean, if it wasn't so hot here, I'd probably have worn a shirt or something. I think there's an element of me that is still embarrassed. I've still got a bit of that 25-year-old sort of art student who would never go to the gym in me. So it's a bit weird for me to be talking about weightlifting.
I understand. Well, let's move on to the topic that you wanted to talk about here, which is AI. And AI it took off right after or during last millennia. I think it was right after last millennia, and suddenly people were sharing all these images. And it was the first, I mean, maybe not the very first iteration of it, but it was the first thing where people could just type in a prompt, I think, and it would draw an image. And the fingers were always messed up.
Yeah.
I think, and the teeth, you know, looked ridiculous, like 1,000 teeth, you know. But over the course of this year, these flaws have been ironed out, and it's everywhere. It's really proliferated to this extent that it's incredible that this time last millennial, it wasn't really a thing. We'd heard about it, but it wasn't a thing like it is now. This has really happened in this year. And there's ChatGPT, which was also at the same time. And actually, the voice in the millennial trailer this year, one of them, the female voice, was done with AI.
Was that 11 Labs?
Yes.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, that's right.
Even 11 Labs, when it first came out, it was and just in the space of a few months, it just became usable. It was a little bit rubbish, and then it was like, for people who don't know, 11 Labs, you can use the voices that they've already given you, but you can also...
It's a very generic, sort of hilarious American jock sort of voices. But yeah, they're very funny, generic voice. But what I did was you can also feed in recordings of someone's voice. And then it analyzes that, and then you can get the person to, you know, not the person, but you can get the thing to synthesize that person's voice saying arbitrary words and sentences. So I fed in recordings of a certain actress from the 1970s. Wonderful diction, absolutely perfect RP, exactly the kind of thing that no actress today can do. So we actually have to rely on AI in that sense, because no fucking human can do it now, which is a travesty. But anyway, so then I got her to say train station tannoy things. And actually, I'll show you the first one that I got. And I've never played this one live. This is the first sort of test that I did. Here it is.
A nice posh voiceover
for Millennium 2023. I don't
know if you heard that. Yeah.
So it was supposed to sound like a train station tannoy. And this is the only time that I've delved into AI, because on the whole, it does unnerve me and freak me out. And it scares me that it's going to make so many people redundant.
For sure.
I mean, it is terrifying. So with that said, no, it's not Joanna Lumley. No. More obscure than that. With that said, why don't you start us on this topic? Because it is very thorny, and not many people have talked about it this millennial, even though it's been a huge thing this year. I think it's still so new that people don't know what to say.
Well, this is the interesting thing. People say it's so new, but I'm in e-commerce, that's how I keep a roof over my head. And I don't think there's a part of my working life that hasn't been affected by it. It's completely revolutionized how me and everyone in my company works. Everyone uses, I'd say, 3 or 4 different AI modules or platforms. You cannot be without it now. And I'd done a stream about six months ago, and it was something like, will AI take over? It already has. And I think it has. I think it certainly in commerce, it's, if you're not using it, you're falling behind. You know, people like you and me have now got as much processing power to analyze stocks as the largest hedge funds in the world. And you can just go to Google and use Bard, which is their ChatGPT. But ChatGPT uses a data set which ended in 2021. So anything after that, you can't really ask. Well, you can't, because it stops. They just fed it loads of information. But Bard actually uses the internet, which is obviously updated daily, updated every minute, every second. And so you can go to Bard, and with very little knowledge of the subject, really, you can say something like, read the 50 most read blogs. You could say something like, read the 50 best performing business websites about Palantir stock and summarize it to me in 1,000 words. And by the time you've pressed enter and lifted your hand back up, it's there. And you've just read the most knowledgeable people on that stock, everything, they, all their research has gone into your 1,000 word summary. And that's just insane. That's all that the hedge funds do. They see, because stocks is about faith and trust and belief. And so you've got the power to do that. You can do that now. There's So for content marketing, if you've got a website and you want Google to, every website has an authority score that Google gives it. And that means that you've got authority in that area. So if you're selling vapes, yeah, if you're writing a new blog every week about vapes, Google likes that. You know, they can see that, oh, this although it's a shop, they're writing about things that are happening in the vaping world. They're writing about legality issues in the vaping world, health issues, whatever. And if you do one of those every week and link them to interlink your own blogs, interlink your blogs with your products, so you've got like a network on your website, Google loves all that sort of stuff. So for my 2 websites, I would usually write a blog every week or every 2 weeks, and it would take 4 or 5 hours. You know, it's a very niche area. It's lock picking, and when you've been doing it 20 years, it's like, what am I going to write about this week? You know, okay. And So you, not only have you got what am I going to write about, but you've got actually writing it, being motivated to write in it, getting the grammar right, getting it flowing well, making it interesting, things that are quite difficult, especially because as a creative writer, I don't write like that at all. I play with language. I use language against language. But as a copywriter, I've got to do the quite the opposite, you know. But now with Bard and ChatGPT, okay, write a 3,000-word blog about Harry Houdini, include 5 quotes from famous people of the era and or journalists, link me to 5 photographs, send. 5 seconds, done. And then it, not only has it given me the blog, but it's also linked me to the photos I wanted. The quotes are there and who wrote them. You have to check them out because sometimes it lies. But that's not hard to do. You just see if they're real. But then what you can do, once you've got it, you know, I sometimes do a little bit of just change that. That's a bit boring, blah, 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 blah. Then once it's done, then you say rewrite, optimize for search engine optimization for a lockpicking shop or for whatever your shop is. And it will rewrite it knowing what the search terms that you need to get into that to move whatever your niche is up the authority ladder. You know, it knows it because it's Google. You know, it's called keyword stuffing. You remember you might have read in the past, you don't get it so much now because or for the last sort of 5 years. I mean, some people with new websites, you see it because they don't know what they're doing. But you'll read a blog about, I don't know, iPhones. And it'll be like, the new iPhone 13 is the best of the new iPhone 13 range because iPhone 13 is what everyone's talking about. I wrote this on an iPhone. And, you know, they're just trying to get iPhone 13. And Google will penalize you for that. But when you get Bard to keyword stuff or ChatGPT, it knows what Google likes. How does it know what Google likes? Because you ask it to optimize for it. So it then goes and has a look at high-performing blogs in that area.
So like getting a class SWAT or the school prefect to write an essay for you. It knows the rules better than you do.
Yeah, good. Yeah, exactly. And also product copy. And here's a... When you say it is definitely going to cost jobs, but there are other areas where I think, let me give you an example. So content marketing like that, okay, you can get it to do it and it will kind of do it. And, you know, you'll be able to read it and know if it's any good because, you know, you can read. But product sales copy, for instance, if you've got a new product, again, if I was writing copy for a product, that used to take me 3-4 hours, whatever. But now you can just say, write me product sales copy for, and then just cut and paste the basic information about the product in it, and it will do it. But because you've asked for product sales copy, it's not going to just be like content marketing. It's going to have a call to action. It's going to have value propositions. It's going to have the thing where it doesn't try and sell you something based on your critical thinking and what you need. It's going to tap into your emotions and sell you something, you know, irrational wants rather than sort of thought out needs, you know, Bernays kind of stuff, because it knows how to do that. Now, the thing is, because I've been product sales copywriting for nearly 20 years, I can look at it and go, right, where's the value proposition? Where's that been sort of repeated? Where's the call to action? Where's this? Where's that? Okay, I can check it out, but only because I know that. If you don't know that and you say, write product copy for this, how do you know if it's good? Although as I say that, you know it's good because it works. You know, you can, even if you got it wrong, you can trust it and it will work. But a friend of mine does all the Batman and Judge Dredd stuff for 2000 AD. Some of the people watching might know him. His name's Jock. He's quite a famous illustrator. And when Midjourney first came out, the image making one, the biggest of the image making ones, certainly on the sort of retail market, I straight away was like, Batman in McDonald's in the style of Jock. And so it, you know, I had a look over the internet. Right, this is Jock. Like, he does Batman, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, 30 seconds. And I looked at it, and Jock's style is very unique. And it looked like Jock had done it. And I was like, shit. You know, and I sent it to him. And this was really early days. He wouldn't have heard of Midjourney. Well, I know he didn't. He got back to me immediately. He went, what the fuck is that? Imagine him responding to that. Imagine you were a professional illustrator who had a very distinct style, and someone sent you a picture that looked like you done it. He was just confused. I said, well, I got AI to do it. And he was very worried, actually. And it's funny you say that Midjourney originally, you know, you'd have, if you had hands, there'd be like seven fingers, every one up here or something. A friend of Jock's, he does graphic novels, called Bill Shinkovich, famously done Electra Assassin and a Wolverine series years ago, Meltdown. Bill Shinkovich done a picture he put up on Twitter, and it was a hand doing the flicking the bird, I think they call it, but it had about seven fingers, and underneath it said, fuck AI. But I said to Jock, the thing is, though, Jock, I think your value as a human is actually going to go up when there's a proliferation of AI cartoons in your style. Because what people want from a story is emotion and connection and identification. And even if it looks the same, you're not going to get that human's unconscious in there. You're not going to get that human's experience of life in there. And I think that's what people... Well, I know that's what people want from stories, because that's how stories have succeeded since, for instance, the novel began and cinema began. So I'm not sure what jobs are going to be lost. There certainly will be some, but I do think there might be a bit of a balancing out here.
So what about the idea that 2000 AD just decide, well, we can get the AI to write the story, and we can allot an illustrator and get AI to do the illustrations for the story in the style of that illustrator. So they just don't need anyone. I mean, is that because that sounds pretty plausible to me based on everything you've said. So
okay,
how can you tell the difference between, you know, what you say, the human touch, the human experience? Somebody reading the story, I don't think they're going to know the difference. Oh, this story has that human touch. The whole point is that AI is replicating the human touch.
Yeah, but if you look at classics, if we look at literature, for instance, AI is not going to write anything Thomas Pynchon wrote. AI is not going to write any David Foster Wallace. And AI is not going to write The Naked Lunch. They're just favourites of mine, because they were things that changed the way we think about literature. AI is not going to write On the Road. It can duplicate things we've already had. And sure, it can sort of mix things together. But I think it's limited in as much as, well, for a start, it doesn't have an unconscious. That this has been my main argument about it, about writing and literature. This damn novel I've been working on for 7 years, which is a lie, really, because I've got a full-time job. I'm sure if I didn't have a full-time job, it would have been done in like two or three. But I think it was Jacques Lacan that said, what I write takes me by surprise and teaches me what I think. It's a 600-page novel, manuscript, sorry, my editor keeps saying it's not a novel. Where's the fucking novel? It's not even, it hasn't been printed yet. But there's a thread through the whole thing of Apocalypse Now that I didn't intentionally put in there. And I've only found that out through going through different drafts and thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is weird. That is from Apocalypse Now. And then noticing the structure is much like Apocalypse Now. Then I started putting Apocalypse Now into it and actually using Willard, Martin Sheen? Yeah, Martin Sheen, Willard in Apocalypse Now, using some of his monologues in my characters' voices. They actually say things he said. So I pulled out something, brought it to the surface that was actually unconsciously put into the manuscript. Now, AI hasn't got that ability, I don't think, because it hasn't got an unconscious itself. By definition, it cannot have an unconscious. It can't not knowingly do anything. I mean, even the world's most powerful computer cannot generate a random number. So, you know, I think commerce is where it's going to cause more. I think commerce is where it will cause more problems in terms of people's jobs. I think the creative stuff, if anything, it will assist writers, painters, illustrators. It will be a combination of the pair of them, much like, you know, writers were when the typewriter was invented. Writers became better at writing because they had a tool. Like I have ChatGPT or Bard open when I'm writing, like I used to have Google open. So what was his name? Blah, 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 blah. And I will sometimes use ChatGPT, but because I'm a Ponzi art student who, as Semiogog said, has been, I don't want to misquote him, but words to the effect, has been royally arse-fucked by postmodernism. My manuscript actually quotes ChatGPT. I play with the idea that this bit has been written by ChatGPT. And I'm not sure ChatGPT could do that. The prompting you'd need would make you know, by the time sometimes this happens, by the time I've written the prompt, I've actually written what I wanted ChatGPT to do. Now, that's talking about technology we've got at the moment. I think the more frightening side of it is live video editing. Like, so me and you could be doing this in 1 year, and I mean 1 year, maybe less, and before we go live we get a palette and it says, would you like to make your skin clearer, would you like to get rid of your eye bags, would you like to you know, have a little facelift here, do you want to bring your receding hairline forward?
Stop looking at me when you're saying these things.
I was looking at myself.
Oops, we are so vain. Sorry, go on, continue.
But to be able to do that live is going to absolutely revolutionize YouTube, for instance. I mean, within a year, there will be no ugly women on YouTube. And I say women because a lot of the value of YouTube female channels, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them is on their beauty and their physical beauty. And if you're setting up a new channel and you're going to want to start talking about makeup or anything, if you can just spruce yourself up and look like a supermodel, you know, you're going to be paying 30 quid a year for this app that will just live. So, you know, you don't have to record the video. You can be talking live and you're just going to look like someone else. And your voice can be changed.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. and mind-boggling, really.
I mean, that's already happening. That software is available.
Yeah, the Snapchat filters, the Instagram filters, that's been a thing for at least 5 years. And I know that it's been available on TikTok in an animated form. You know, people will say, oh, look, and it looks crap, but it's nonetheless, it's fucking clever, you know, to make someone look like a cat or something wacko like that. But obviously that's just the start of it. And as you're saying, a year from now, it could be, you know, it's me and Dangerfield, but it looks like Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis or something.
Yeah, and that sort. But here's another weird kind of sort of quite sinister angle to all of this. I mean, look, I'm not a massive supporter of AI. I just know that in my business, if I don't use it to the extent I do, I'm at a disadvantage with my competitors. So I have to, you know, that's just the reality of commerce.
Sorry, was I muted when I said my last thing about Bruce Willis?
No, you're
full. Right. Yeah. Someone's saying that I've been
Bruce Willis.
Right, okay.
Here's something interesting. So I've got a channel that's not my Dangerfield YouTube channel. It's one that's... It's just social media marketing for my business. And I suddenly realized that if you're starting a new channel these days, it's almost algorithmically necessary to make shorts. YouTube are so scared of TikTok's massive and rapid growth that if you're not making shorts, I mean, there'll be the odd one that gets away with it, but making shorts is almost essential now to build a channel. And YouTube want that to be the case because they want to compete with TikTok and they want to compete with Instagram. Now, here's where it gets a little bit sinister. Well, depending on how it always quite sinister. But so I started making shorts and, you know, one of them had 3.5 million views. And I was thinking, okay, that's good. And I kept going, doing pretty well, you know. I think my shorts on that channel average about 13,000 views. You know, they take me 5 minutes to make. I take content from a long form video, which, by the way, on the same channel get about, well, sometimes I get a couple of thousand views, but it's usually around 800. But the shorts get like 12,000 because they're short. And people are a little bit more into that. Although, interestingly, it has gone from 15 seconds to 30 to 60. So that's kind of against what people were saying. Oh, everyone's got a low attention span. But, you know, that's a strange sort of backlash. But here's a strange thing. I get contacted by companies trying to sell me all this AI stuff all the time. And I got contacted by a company called Captions. And they said to me, we notice you're doing well with your shorts on this channel. Have you thought about captions? You've obviously seen them. So when you watch a short, there's like, it's like subtitles, but they're a bit funky, all the angles. And
Yeah. I find them really distracting. I always find subtitles like this. I can't not look at the subtitles.
You've nailed it. That's why they're there. So this is what the man says to me. He said, well, not this man, actually. They said, we'll give you a free trial and then get back to us. So the first thing I do is research it because I'm not going to ponce around with something unless I actually know how it works. Now, and here's the thinking behind it. And I've proven it to work, and as have millions of other people. It's almost impossible to watch a video on a vertical that's got captions that are sort of, you know, nearly a fifth of the screen. So when you zoom up or whatever you do on whatever platform you're on, the video starts. And it's like, you know, it's like a kid show. Wah, bing, da, da. There's smileys going off here and there. There's this big sort of glow-in-the-dark caption here. And you read the caption. So you read it because it's almost impossible not to. And when you get to the end of that 15, 30 or 60 second video, you're like, hang on a minute, I didn't watch the video. So you watch it again, thus doubling your viewing time, which means that gives YouTube twice as much time from the same content
to
advertise. Right, that's dark, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you watch it again. Now, here's something else that's weird about, interesting about it. When you're at the moment, when you speak words, and you know, when I do those shorts on that video, it's a very exaggerated version. I'm sort of like, oh no, look at this lock. What am I going to do? This is the worst kind of security in the world. I put this in here, I open it up, I turn it around, it's open. Now, YouTube can't really do much of that. That's just sort of almost white noise to it. But when you use captions, YouTube has now got those words and that it knows what those words are. So it knows what audience to send to you. You know, you can add your couple of hashtags, but when it's got your 60-second or whatever script, it can just, you know, that word's repeated four times, that word's repeated six times, okay. And so it helps, again, with your search engine optimization because the captions encode the actual words. It's, you know, it's not as simple as what you think. At first, you just think, oh, you know, the youth like all these funky letters. But, you know, doubling your ad time is incredible. Think of it from YouTube's point of view. I mean, I'll be guessing at the numbers, but let's just say 5 million hours a day. And then someone invents, or a few companies invent captions, within a week, it's 10 million a day. It's like, sweet, we've just, you know, doubled our ad revenue.
Yeah. I actually thought it was for people who were either deaf or hearing impaired. I didn't understand why else would you need, I mean, obviously, if it's in a different language, then, but it never is. It's always someone speaking English with on-screen captions in English. Yeah. So it's like a default thing on the internet now.
Interestingly, though, you say that. I'm not affiliated with captions, by the way. If you do make shorts, though, it is wicked. Captions will turn... All right, so I just gave you an example of how I speak when I do those captions, and it really is like that, you know, because it has to be to get people's attention, you know, because the visuals don't, I can assure you. But I've probably used captions on, I don't know, 70 videos now, maybe 100, I don't know. And when you upload, so you make the video, you know, iPhone film editor, iMovie or whatever it's called, you record the voiceover, and then you upload that into captions, press a button, 30 seconds, and then the captions are there. And I think in about somewhere between 60 and 100 videos, it's got like two words wrong. And that's just...
I know. Insane. And this is another thing. You see the speed of progress. You know, it's the same with Google Translate, which I've used quite a lot because I have friends in other countries, and sometimes they'll send me a tweet forgetting that I can't speak Swedish or whatever. So I'll quickly put the tweet through that. This kind of thing. So, and anyway, it used to make mistakes a lot, and now it hardly ever does. And Martin Lichtman sent me one of his essays, and I put it through Google Translate, put the whole thing through. There's a word limit, so I had to do it in bits. But anyway, it was entirely understandable in English, the translation that it spat out in a second.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was like a couple of months ago. And it's just unbelievable. It's the same as you say with the captions. Because again, you can't help but read the captions. So you're aware of, you spot instantly when it doesn't match up with what's said. And usually it's not that it got the word wrong, but it forgot, it didn't realize that was a new sentence there. So it doesn't pick up full stop. That happens quite a bit, but that's really it. It's very rare to anything any more serious than that. I mean, it is, you can understand people's trepidation and fear and worry about this because everyone thinks of Skynet and and cyberdyne systems, you know, understandably. And the Matrix.
I mean, there's one... there's another sinister bit I think you'll enjoy about that captions thing, and not watching the video and reading the captions and then realizing that you didn't watch the video, so you double your time. There's also a lot of research showing that when you decide to watch it again because you missed the video, you actually watch the captions again. So you actually treble your your viewing time. But this is going back to what you said about it all in English. I've been thinking, actually, captions will translate my voice. It will put foreign captions up, or it will make me... So I talk in English. I mean, you don't see my face on those shorts. I talk in English, it will translate that into Brazilian, Spanish, Mandarin, you know, in a matter of, well, you know, it's not even worth talking about the time. It's just a press of a button. And I'm thinking of starting to upload some of my stuff in foreign languages, because it's all, we think it's English centric, but that's because we are. You know, if imagine getting a Chinese audience, imagine getting Brazil, imagine becoming like an influencer in Brazil. It's a huge market. Now, I know it's one of the weirdest things I've ever said, imagine being an influencer in Brazil. But, you know, if you want to get your video seen, why not put them out there in 10 languages? You know, why not? So in terms of it, the net potential negative consequences, I haven't got time to worry about it, to be honest with you. That's my, and that, I know that sounds a little bit, well, extremely blasé, but what am I going to do? I mean, there's all these people talking about, oh, we're going to have to watermark AI-generated images. Well, everyone who says that, like even Zuckerberg has said they're going to do that on Facebook or Meta or whatever. Any images that are AI generated are going to have this AI watermark. Do they not realize that by the following week, someone's going to have designed an AI bit of software that removes that watermark? It's just, you know, that's not going to happen. People told me when I was talking about content marketing, using AI to write content marketing, Google are going to punish people, penalize authority for people who are using AI to write content. No, they're not. Google wants quality content. And my guess is AI is going to up the overall content marketing, because a lot of content marketing I see, you know, people might be good at, they might be good at roadside recovery, but they're not great writers. They're not interesting writers, but AI can do a better job than them. And that's what Google wants. Google wants to know that when someone types in sunbeds or whatever, the organic listings, i.e. not the paid for ones, they're the best ones. You know, otherwise people slowly stop using Google, be like, this is shit. But Google doesn't give a shit if you use AI or not. They want quality content.
So someone's just said a good name for a truther channel in Brazil would be Brazilian Facts. Quite amusing. Thank you for that one, BRB. It's lit up what would otherwise be potentially a quite depressing stream. But, you know, can you see what I mean, though? I mean...
Hang on, whoa.
Unnerved by all of this.
You used 11 labs without a second thought, didn't you?
Not without a second thought. I did think about it, but I also thought, well, I can have this incredible voice in my videos if I use this.
There you go. It's a tool.
And I did see it very much as a tool. Yeah. It didn't make the fucking trailer for me. You know, I still had to work for weeks on this thing. So it's not like it negated the creative impulse or, you know, whatever. It's a tool.
They've already got it. It's just a question of when it's going to get released. Voice to video. So you get your screen comes up and you just say, I want a blonde woman and a tall man with dark hair, white shirt, blue jeans, woman in a little black dress, in a park, in Hyde Park, London, actually. And as you're discussing this with yourself, it's making a video of it. And so you say they're walking down towards, they're going down towards Park Lane. It's actually make it, the sun's just gone down, that lovely golden hour. There you go. Couple of red London buses, streets are quite busy. Music a little bit like Philip Glass's, Steve Wright's For 18 Musicians, but I haven't got the money for the copyright. So it sounds a bit like Steve Wright's For 18 Musicians. So the soundtrack comes on. You're put voice to movie. And so you lose the crew. You lose the camera people. You know, I don't need to tell you who you need at the moment to make a movie. But now you can make, soon you'll be able to make a feature film sitting in your room for a few weeks, just talking at the screen. I think that's incredible because that's the end of Hollywood. That, you know, they really have to up their game if they're going to compete with, you know, once that.
Well, you see, the thing is, it would negate the entire special effects, visual effects industry, all of that. So they wouldn't have, there'd be no point in Hollywood upping their game in terms of spectacle, because you can compete, you know, a 15-year-old with this software can compete with that. They'd have to compete with, in terms of writing quality.
Well, yeah, that
would be a nightmare for them.
Well, yeah, that's their weakest element. But that's what I said. This is where we go back to my point about Jock. I think that people, if you offer them a comic that's 100% AI generated, written and drawn by AI, or you say, here's one that looks the same, but Jock done it, that then you know that every brushstroke, every line has got Jock storytelling going into it, and his emotions and his deeper feelings, and you know there's just something very cold about AI stories. When I read something, it's always about the human. When I'm reading Kerouac's On the Road, I'm thinking about Jack Kerouac. I'm thinking about me, because that's what we really do. But I'm thinking about how me and Jack are similar, or how I felt that, or I've had a situation like that. You're not going to get that when you know it's computer generated. I'm identifying with essentially a montage of history. You know, there's no sort of real connection to a writer.
I don't know. My fear is that AI will simply learn to replicate that as well.
Well, again, though, but unable to have an unconscious, I don't think it can. You know, when you read literature, good literature, textually, and you can start making connections that you know the author. Well, you can assume, you think, hang on, did the author think that? And then you get a deeper reading of the text. You can, and this has been done. People have done readings of movies and readings of books that the authors have said, I didn't intend that at all. I didn't write that, but I'm not going to argue with it. It's there. And it will be something about, I can't remember who it was, but someone's mother killed themselves. And it wasn't as blatant as there was a mother suicide in it, but there was sort of a lot of sort of unconnected, so the reader had to do that work, unconnected symbolism to do with growing up, abandoned by a mother figure, and you know that's when literature's great. That's when you sort of come alive. You think, oh, hang on a minute, you know. And if AI replicates that, okay, but you're not connecting with a human. You're just not. You're connecting with yourself, and so it's a bit. I can think those things anyway. Why am I bothering reading this? I can think about things. I want to connect with a human who's had the courage and the bravery to sort of put time into a piece of work and try and be as truthful as they can in what they're saying, because when artists and writers do that, you do get this unconscious sort of layered textual potential reading. And I'm just not interested in reading a computer doing that. Even if it was identical, the fact that it wasn't written by someone. You know, I don't want to read a book if I don't know the author, because of that, what I just explained to you. It's just a bit like, well, hang on, I want to know a bit about this person, you know. And if it's AI, I mean, I suppose you could lie. You could invent someone. But then I'm going to feel cheated at some point. You know, it's a bit like, yeah, I got you. You know, you'd be like, well, okay, but now I feel like all those things I felt I identified with that writer, I didn't. You know, you conned me. It's a confidence trick. I never thought literature would do that. I never expected to be conned by a book.
No, of course not. But I guess that is really the point here, apart from the fact that it will make millions of people potentially unemployed and unemployable. There's also that it will rupture this relationship that people have with art, whether it's fine art or drama, literature, and so on. In other words, we won't know what's true anymore. There won't be a mirror. There won't be a thing recording and reflecting on life. It will be AI continually pretending to do so.
But I think there'll be, I absolutely agree with you, but I think what you'll get is what we've pretty much got from the internet and technology from like the Industrial Revolution forward, is a proliferation of shit. Of you know, very formulaic culture industry, and what that has actually done is made very special things stand out, because writers, and I keep saying writers, but I'll just say artists who care want to sort of not be part of that. They don't want to be part of an industry that's formulaic, that it's painting by numbers or writing by numbers. And so, you know, like the photography didn't kill, well, depending on what you think. I don't think photography killed art like a lot of people think it did. I think modernism, especially in painting, was fantastic. I think the likes of Paul Klee, Kandinsky, Warhol, all that whole sort of mid to second half of the 20th century, a response to the technology of the camera. Once a camera came about, artists were sort of like, you know, these conversations that we're having now were had then pretty much. Well, what's the point of being a painter? Because you can just take a photograph now and everyone's like, well, what's going to happen? And modernism in painting, what a phenomena. And a challenging phenomena as well. You know, you've got paintings that are worth sort of 40 million that are an alcoholic just dripping paint on a huge canvas that are considered masterpieces. Now, I don't believe in masterpieces anyway, but that conversation's there because of that. And you don't get that without photography. Photography didn't kill art. It kept it alive.
And you think that AI could do the same. See, one thing that's worth saying here is that the the state of things immediately prior to AI was pretty fucking bad. And when you look at like these awful Marvel superhero films, what's the difference? You know, humans have already human creators have already degraded themselves to such an extent that can you really tell the difference between a Marvel superhero film and a Marvel superhero film that was scripted by an AI?
I think you're right. But think of a movie, what's his name, the Danish director, Anders. Oh, someone in the chat will know him. He uses that that Danish actor all the time, very handsome bloke. I can't think of his name. He made the film.
I think I know the director. Not Lars von Trier.
No, not Lars von Trier. The other one.
Wendig.
No, you're thinking of Werner Herzog. No, Anders. Fuck it. It doesn't matter. But he's made some great films while those Hollywood movies were going along. He made things like Riders of Justice. He made the one about they find this article on the internet that says we're actually all alcohol deficient by like 0.00 something.
Anders Thomas Jensen.
That's it, Anders Jensen. And so it's called something like Have a Tipple, and it's these sort of five blokes in this small town who decide they're going to just have a little bit of alcohol every morning. So he made that. He made Riders of Justice. He made the one about the bloke who got accused of being a paedophile. These were all being made while the Hollywood movies were being made. So AI doesn't change that. You know, it's the quality of the story. You know, if I haven't got a problem with superheroes if the story's worth hearing.
I didn't mind the Christopher Nolan Batman films. It seems to be becoming fashionable to shit on that trilogy. I still haven't seen the third one, but I really liked the first two, especially the second one. But the superhero films that we're getting nowadays, fuck's sake.
What are we talking about? I mean, all I really know is people say the MCU a lot. Is that Marvel Comic Universe? I mean, that's pretty much all I know.
Yes. Yeah. Marvel, it's either comics or characters universe, but I think it's Marvel Comics universe. Yeah. And they splice together different superheroes from different thick comic strips into one storyline. And it's utter garbage, but it's extremely expensively made garbage and completely hollow. This is my point. You were saying earlier that this will kill Hollywood. I hope so, because Hollywood is just awful. It's become this. That's where you get to this interesting thing about AI empowering people to, and I don't like that term, you know, democratization or whatever, but maybe it could only be better than what Hollywood is doing. Mm. I suspect it could be.
Well, you know, AI is not going to change the MCU. It will just make it easier and cheaper for them to do. So, okay, there not much changes there. In fact, I'd say that the value of it will probably plummet because of the proliferation. You know, you'll be getting film companies set up overnight with like four staff, and they can knock out these films every month, and so their value just plummets, while you've got people who are prepared to put time into story and into meaning, and they'll be able to use AI simply because previously they couldn't afford it. I was talking to Dan, I had him on the other night, previously known as the Iconoclast, and I was talking to him. I've been watching some fascinating documentaries about people making feature films with their iPhones. And I remember this was being touted 4 or 5 years ago, and there was a couple made that I watched that weren't great. But the quality of a camera, I've got a 13 or a 14, I don't know. But one of these documentaries, if you get one of those balancing rigs that, you know, you sort of strap it on your shoulder. So, you know, the bloke was saying it, you can do without dollies, you can do without this, you can do without this. He said it is feasible now to make a feature film on an iPhone that you can edit on your laptop and you won't be compensating. You know, they're that kind of quality. And I'm with you on this cultural, you just said it, what's the word, a democratic culture. I remember I had a tutor at art school. He said, you went to art school, didn't you? We won't go down that road again. But he stood up in front of us and he went, right, what's the difference between a democratic culture and a cultural democracy? I was just thinking, not much, mate, not much. Just you didn't write a lecture for this morning, so you're going to
Have another draw on the spliff, pal.
I mean, if you go back to the Renaissance, you know, if you could ponce up a bit of money, you could buy some oil paints and some brushes and get busy. Van Gogh was a painter. He didn't do too well while he was alive, but he did paint for a living. He did exhibit, you know, Cezanne exhibited while he was alive. And it's almost like the 20th century actually took the culture out of our hands, industrialized it, and that's when then it monopolizes it. You know, the likes of you and me or our parents weren't really my parents certainly weren't in a position to make a TV show. They certainly weren't in a position to make a movie, but, you know.
Yeah, this is actually a very, very interesting turn in the conversation, because it means that I could have my dream of being a film director, yeah, or a TV director. I could make, like I directed that 70s actress voice in 11 Labs, I could make a 70s TV drama, but they're talking about 2020s society, you know, 2020s issues. So I could actually do that on my own using AI and thus be the director that I wanted. Now, obviously, it's not being the director that I wanted to be in the sense of working with other people, leading a team effort, going into an actual studio.
But hang on.
Actresses and that, yeah, the fun stuff. That kind of stuff would obviously be missing. But I would end up with a 70s drama, which otherwise I could never have made, because, as you say, that it was all monopolized. It became an industry. It became something extremely expensive and difficult to do, and thus completely out of the reach of an ordinary person. And maybe that's not how art should be.
Exactly.
And I'm all for skill. I absolutely am for that. But the way it's gone is not skill necessarily. In fact, a lot of the people in the industry are not skilled or talented.
So. No, exactly. But doesn't that make you see why have the likes of you and me, or let's just say everyone, if they want, they've got access to that kind of the technology required to do that. And I think one fetishizes filmmaking if you're talking about a studio and, you know, working with you know, you'd still work with actors and actresses, wouldn't you? Because it would be great, like, you know, the way Mike Lee works. You might have to hire some actors to just help you write the script, and also to, you know, so that you can get some ideas of watching them work together. Because I don't know about you, but I'm an awful actor. I'd done a Meisner course, and it was six of the worst days of my life. It was just unbearable. And
I've never tried acting. I think my own personality is so distinctive that it would always just be me. You know, I don't think I'm bland enough to sort of merge into a character.
Well, in a weird way, though, that's what acting is. That's what best. And writing. You know, that's the only way you reach a convincing emotion is to find it in yourself, in its truth, and then just put it into that character.
Well, you know this thing about how an author will always have a character who's just himself. It's like a cipher for him in the story.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing where I think it's so difficult to place yourself into someone. No doubt there are writers, authors who have this ability. But I think with a lot of authors, they don't have this ability, because it's a very difficult thing to do. So you end up with a character who's basically just you in that story.
All my work is autobiographical, pretty much all of it. But in terms of my writing process, that's what you do. All my characters, even if I invent a couple to sort of, you know, something actually happened, but I want to tell a story, I want to get to deeper truths. So there might be a female in this scene that I want to bring in because I've actually got a story beat that I have to get in, because in the real world there wasn't a story beat, but to keep people reading I need a beat. Now I can't just guess I can't just think, well, she'd be upset and go, ah, it's horrible. I have to find me in that position and then just, you know, it goes voice, character, story. And so voice is you, that it, you know, as the author, as the director, whatever writer, the voice is always you. So character comes from that, whether it's one or 10. And then character goes into story. I'm kind of obsessed with this stuff at the moment because I'm talking to, obviously my editor about this. But I just want to pull it back to, if you don't fetishize the idea of, you know, I do understand your dream of going in and you've got directors of photography and you've got a crew and, you know, you're right, like, you know, we're building reality. But if you can move that out of the way, because films weren't made like that 100 years ago because they didn't have that technology. And so all it is, oh, there's different technology to make films now. And so that technology, it is you with your laptop and speech to film, you know. And in 60 years, there'll be someone like you and me having this conversation, and technology, it will be thought to movie, like in 30 minutes, you know, you just sit there, think of the whole story, and then it gives you 20 variations of it. And someone will say, yeah, but it's not it's not the same as the good old days when you'd use your iPhone and do speech to film. Do you know what I mean? As technology develops, the previous one becomes fetishized and kind of, oh, we're missing all that. But, you know, would you rather have the ability to make a movie on a budget of 20 quid or hope that maybe you win the lottery and can make a movie in the, in inverted commas, traditional way?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It is a very interesting, because I can see the Woodlander in the chat disapproving of all of this, and I understand why. Well, I think I understand why he objects to all of it, and I share a lot of these concerns, especially the social concerns. But and then also the thing about the creative impulse. The thing is, if you think about when CGI first started, it was extremely difficult to do because you had to be a maths PhD basically because you had to do most of the calculations yourself. It was very, very difficult. And over time, it's become easier. So you don't have to do everything manually and so forth. And no one says, well, it should be like it was in 1980, like when they did Tron in 82. That's real. It's CGI, and what they're doing now is fake. It's too easy. No one would say that, and similarly, no one would say, "Well, you typed that novel. You didn't actually write it. You didn't use a feather and a quill. You typed it. Therefore, it's not. You didn't work hard enough on that."
Well, they did say that about modernism painting. Let's be fair.
I mean, oh yeah. I know, but retrospectively, I mean, nobody would say this. That's the point. Once it's retrospective, it's, you might have fondness for an old technique, an old technology, but you're also glad that the new technology exists. You sort of breathe a sigh of relief. I mean
look, the culture industry's got us by the balls already. I'm failing to understand what we're going to lose through the development of AI here. You know, we're already monopolized. Our culture is already fed to us, pre-digested, ready chewed. You know, you do get the odd anomaly that comes out here and there, and you know, it's almost like a rubber ring that those of us who actually care about culture are holding on to. But it's already gone. You know, we're in a mess. I think after Warhol started doing screen prints of Marilyn Monroe and was the biggest artist in the world, what a comment about culture. And after that, it's a bit like, you know, some of the biggest films of the last 20, 30 years, like Lord of the Rings, you know, I mean, I can barely barely understand what's going on in those films. It's just like a battle, a couple of sort of soothing words and a battle. And I mean, what the fuck is that? You know, I enjoy it, but I am just sitting there consuming, passively consuming the spectacular.
I haven't seen the Lord of the Rings films or read the novels, but this is how I felt watching the Napoleon film a few weeks ago. I mean, yeah, you'd have a battle and then a scene between some people conversing and then a battle and then another scene of people conversing and then another battle. And that's basically it.
Yeah.
The whole fucking thing, like 2.5-3 hours or whatever.
I mean, the hero's journey is pretty much that, isn't it? You get a character, you give him a problem, then he sort of is a bit worried, then give him a bigger problem, make the problem worse, then he decides to take it on. It nearly kills him, but he manages to survive. Then he fucks off home with the elixir, what he learned from it. That's the 12 parts of the 3-act hero's journey. Every Hollywood movie pretty much sticks to it. The novel, the so-called picaresque I've been working on for 7 years, I realised the other day has got a hero's journey. So ingrained into us is that form of storytelling. I'm not sure what we're actually going to lose from being able to create, make movies with AI. I mean, it's getting a bit confusing, this conversation anyway. I'm not quite sure what we're talking about. And that could have a lot.
Well, we're just discussing the matter. I mean, I don't have a rock hard position on the issue. So yeah, the conversation's a bit directionless, but that's because we're sort of, it's a very new topic and we're sort of feeling our way around it. Have doubts. I have skepticism, whereas you're quite full throated in support of it.
Well, I'm not. I'm actually neutral.
I'm not saying that you're a ideologue about it, but you're more clearly pro it than I am.
When Edward Bernays, Freud's nephew, when he realized in the 40s, 50s, roughly, that you could sell stuff to people based on their unconscious emotions rather than their conscious needs. It was already, society had already taken a very dark turn. And we haven't come out of that yet. We're still in that. That's why we still are happy, everyone, to passively consume the spectacular. Whether that's watching the new Reacher series, which I absolutely love. I love it. I mean, it's a sort of dirty secret of mine that I've been reading Lee Childs for years. So I watch the Reacher series. It's loads of fights. It's, you know, I know what's going to happen because it's the same old story, hero's journey every episode. Okay, I get it. But what I think what we actually need, I think there it comes back to education, and people should start understanding that art, that culture, you should actually be active. You should be active in the consumption of culture. It's not something we do passively, just sit there and go, okay. I always use this line. Those spaces between the artist and the reader, a lot goes on there regarding meaning. And the reader, and I mean reading in the general sense, looking at a painting, watching a film, reading a book, people need to understand that you don't just sit there and passively receive it. You actually have to engage in finding out what it means, identifying with it. There's a job. The artist has got a job to do there. The artist, the culture industry, like I said, it gives you pre-digested baby food. You don't need to do any of that. Everything's there. It's almost like a report. It's almost like a shopping list. Whereas a good artist, a good writer, leaves stuff out. And so for you to make sense of it, you have to fill in the gaps. You have to start investing the context that is you as a person into those gaps. Experiences and memories that you've got, you fill it into those gaps. You actively engage with the creation of meaning therefore it affects you on a more profound level, and the artwork has got a greater, more impactful social, historical, potentially political function. Since the likes of Bernays, that stopped. It's all just passive consumption. I think that AI isn't necessarily going to make that better or worse. I think it actually gives us an opportunity to challenge it, because we don't need millions of dollars. You know, I've always wanted to make a movie. I had a movie made, but the fucking production company, oh man, that's another story. But, you know, I'd love to make a movie one day, but I've always thought I'm never going to get enough money. These days, well, I'd always thought in the last sort of 20 years, you're going to need at least 5 mil. And a fair amount of that's going to go on marketing and publicity, because there's no point making a film if no one's going to see it. It's just a waste of time. But AI has made me think, well, actually, in a couple of years, 5 years, I might be able to make a feature film.
Voice to video kind of thing.
Well, or just iPhone. But, you know, we've got other platforms where we can market these things, where we can actually get it out there. So, you know, someone sitting at a computer with the quality of software and that we've got at the moment can get this stuff out there. A classic example is Man Bites Dog. You know, do you know Man Bites Dog?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Belgium film students. I can't remember when it was made. I think 80s, maybe late 80s. I might be completely wrong there. No, I think it's late 80s. Man Bites Dog. A few of them got together. They raised £10,000 and they made a film called Man Bites Dog. And it's a great movie. It's one of those great movies that you just got to see and you will never forget it. It will challenge your perception of not only your life and human relationships and connection and all the good things that art can do, but also filmmaking. Also the idea that they were students. It won loads of awards and that, and really sort of caused a ripples in the industry. And, you know, not everyone can get that 10 grand together. Not everyone's that motivated, but people do have the good ideas. And I think being a bit concerned about AI on this level, only on this level, is a bit like getting a bit concerned about getting editing software and getting Paint Shop, you know, on a laptop. I'm not sure why you would actually see that as a concern.
Well, maybe you and Woodlander should do a heated debate about this.
No, man, he lives in the woods. He's like a gnome, isn't he?
he's a very nice man.
I know him, or I wouldn't have said that, would I?
Right, okay. he's a great guy. He's going to be on Millennial, I think tomorrow night. Let me just see.
Simon, let's do it, man. After in the new year, I'd love to have you on. Come on, and we'll have a chat about it. A pleasure.
All right.
Well, that, I would have called him a gnome if I didn't know him, would I?
All right. There's one super chat for you. Let me see. Okay, this is from Aethelward. Dangerfield, do you still see many... This is a completely different subject, just to warn you. Do you still see many British and Australian younger Zoomers and Millennials making pub tour vacations in your area? Or do you believe it was always just a Boomer and Gen X thing? Have many Christmas in the tropical... So do you still see people doing pub tour vacations?
I imagine... correct me if I'm wrong, but you might think I'm in Thailand. I'm in Cambodia, which isn't anywhere near it's not like Thailand. You think it would be, but it isn't really. There's a sort of half square mile that looks a little bit like Pattaya, but There was one. Here's the difference. I'll give you the difference in a little tale. There were a group of Australians who hooked up with some ladies of easy leisure, took them back to their hotel room and had an orgy and thought it would be fun to video it and put it on social media. And they're still in prison. you can get away with a lot out here, but you cannot insult the country. They do not, rightly so, they do not tolerate that. And so they shouldn't either.
Yeah.
I also don't go out to that sort of area anymore. You know, I've been with my missus for nearly 6 years now. So, you know, I've not talked about boozing on the edge.
All right. Excellent. Well, this has been an interesting stream. So thank you for doing it. As I say, I don't really have a position about AI, except that I am aware of the dangers of it. I think I'm aware of the dangers of it. But as you say, and quite a few other people say, it's a tool. And they see, the other thing is, and I didn't say this, that it's going to be inescapable. The only way you're going to escape it is literally to detach from normal life completely and normal society completely. Now, maybe someone thinks that's a good idea, but if you're not going to do that, then you are going to see AI images, you are going to read AI written text, and you probably will see AI produced dramas and shows on TV and whatever. It's just going to be an unavoidable thing in the world in the near future, if it isn't already.
It is already, would be my response. And I know you've got to go. What I will say is most of the things people tell me that they're scared about, that they're concerned about that with AI is already happening and has been happening for years. AI just might make it a little bit harder to detect.
Yeah. Wing says, corporations have never respected artists. So the bad news is people will lose work. The good news is people can be more independent. Yeah, I think the issue is going to be distribution, as it has been for quite a long time. The production is becoming ever easier because of AI and other tools. The issue that what you can replicate from the industry is the distribution capabilities. YouTube's algorithm, you could say that solves that, but it doesn't really, because it's in the hands of the Google Corporation, and people like me are simply banned completely from YouTube. So we are totally excluded from it. That's a good example of the power of corporations, the power of the algorithm, and the power of AI potentially, but also the monopolies that we're hoping will be broken up by advancing technology. I guess the issue really is, why should they break it up? If they own the technology, then why should they allow it to break up their monopoly? It's a whole thing. It's a big topic. But anyway, let's leave it at that for now. Maybe we'll return to this issue in a year from now.
And that would be interesting.
You as Stallone and me as Bruce Willis.
I wouldn't put it past it happening. That would be amazing.
All right. Okay, well, this has been good. So I'll be back in half an hour with Off Grid Ireland.
But, Woz, can I just say one more very quick thing, not about AI?
Yes, go on.
To the people watching this and who are going to no doubt watch more, it's so much work for Woz. I stream. I know what doing one stream's like, organising it and doing it. The man's doing so many. He does it every year. Give him some money, even if it's just like a fiver, because if enough people give him that, it would make a difference to his life. And trust me, I couldn't do this. I couldn't do what he does. I haven't got the energy, the motivation. Donate to him if you're enjoying the content.
He's right. What Dangerfield just said is the truth. So I'm nervous. I hate asking for donations and money, but as I've said, it has been 3.5 months of work. So if you can donate, please do. All right. Thank you for saying that, Dangerfield. And thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Really is a privilege.
Okay. I'll see you all in half an hour.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. There are many ways to make a cash donation. Find all of these at millennial.com/donate. Your kindness will be warmly appreciated.
All aboard.
Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.